This is Focus West Michigan for Tuesday, June 30, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki with your local news. A West Michigan builder is speaking out about affordable housing construction challenges with statistics backing up his claims. WGVU's Dee Morrison has the story.
If you can't afford $500,000, you're screwed.
Sable Homes President John Bitely says regulations, permitting delays, and rising costs are limiting homeownership in Michigan.
Let's be honest. When somebody hears affordable housing, what's the first thing they think of? Most of the time they think of government subsidies, they think of crime, they think of challenging situations. Affordable housing technically is described as if you spend more than 30% of your income for housing, it's not affordable to you.
This month, more than 1,100 housing advocates and the National Association of Home Builders urged Congress to reform regulatory barriers, adding an average of more than $130,000 to the cost of a new single-family home. Bitely says local leadership often pushes back against developments for lower-income families.
There's a number of communities that are doing things to block higher densities. Some of them are just flat admitting that they only want to be a community for the elite.
Bitely advocates for tiny homes or accessory dwelling units, which can be built for $125,000, but says most local communities ban them.
Our society has to decide. It's easy to give lip service to affordable houses, but nobody's making the tough decisions to allow them to happen.
I'm Dee Morrison.
A proposal that could bring a Trader Joe's, Chick-fil-A, and a Culver's to a corner in Wyoming is not approved. WGVU's Phil Dawson reports the city says the project is not appropriate for the neighborhood.
Staff's recommendation is to deny the rezoning request.
Deputy Wyoming City Manager Nicole Hofert says tearing down 8 homes on the corner of 52nd and Wilson to make room for large retail, possibly including Trader Joe's, Chick-fil-A, and Culver's, is not what residents said they wanted when the master plan was adopted.
This is very different from the vision the community had.
The owners of the 8 houses on the corner want their land rezoned so they can sell the combined 11 acres for commercial development. Tony Haynes lives in one of the houses.
We believe that rezoning this property will help make Wyoming an even better place to live.
Their realtor, Brian Silvernail, says Trader Joe's, Culver's, and Chick-fil-A are interested in the location.
Culver's, Chick-fil-A, the two best fast food stores.
Nearby resident Laureen Robinson is opposed.
Having fast food restaurants would be horrible. Hearing drive-through orders all day into the night.
And so is Gary DeYoung.
More traffic, more noise, more lights.
Alex Smart was the only planning commissioner voting for the rezoning.
Opens the door to a Trader Joe's come in here.
The rezoning did not pass. Chris Weller and 6 others voted no.
I'm all for Trader Joe's, but probably not here. It's not a good fit.
I'm Phil Dawson.
Starting Wednesday, Harbor Transit buses in the Grand Haven area will take riders to the Ottawa County Fillmore campus. As WGVU's David Limbaugh explains, the service is free for a limited time.
Grand Haven's Harbor Transit is launching a 2-year pilot program extending service to Ottawa County's Fillmore campus in West Olive, improving access for individuals who do not have reliable ways to reach government services and critical appointments. The pilot program runs from July 1, 2026 until July 1, 2028, and the rides will be free until December 31st of this year. Ottawa County has recently consolidated the family division of the 20th Circuit Court to the Family Justice Center on the Fillmore campus. The center includes juvenile court services, Friend of the Court, the Legal Self-Help Center, and Circuit Court Records, services that were previously housed at the Grand Haven Courthouse. Later this summer, Veterans Services is moving its office from Holland to the Fillmore Complex, joining the existing Juvenile Detention Center, Ottawa County Jail, Sheriff's Office, Clerk and Register of Deeds, and Treasurer. More information can be found online at harbortransit.org. I'm David Limbaugh.
State grants will fund the cleanup and repurposing of 5 contaminated sites. As WGVU's Dee Morrison reports, 3 of them are in West Michigan.
The Michigan Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy is awarding over $3.5 million in brownfield redevelopment grants to 5 community projects. One will turn the former Maplewood dry cleaners in Holland into a flower shop. Eagle Brownfield Coordinator Douglas Coop says a $200,000 grant will pay for cleanup and safety controls.
Dry cleaning operations use some solvents, and this happened to leak through the drains underneath the building, so it created a risk of vapors working their way into the building.
In Kalamazoo, a contaminated paper mill site will be converted into affordable housing and recovery services. A $1 million grant will fund crucial environmental safety. safety barriers.
Liners under the stormwater pond so it doesn't mix with the soils below. Vapor mitigation system to deal with any solvents or petroleum gases that might still be present. And then a clean cap of any of the green space.
The Grand Rapids University Preparatory Academy received $745,000 to clean up a former gas station site for the expansion of the middle and high school. Other projects include a high-rise in Ann Arbor and a warehouse facility in Oak Park. I'm Dee Morrison.
Coming up soon, WGVU's Patrick Center previews tonight's frontline presentation of The Crown Prince and the President on WGVU Public Television. But first, news from around the state. A U.S. Supreme Court decision on Monday upholds a Michigan rule that ensures votes that arrive late can still be counted. The 5-4 decision upholds a Mississippi law, but also appears to affirm a 2022 voter-approved voting rights amendment to the Michigan Constitution. One of its provisions allows absentee ballots cast by military and overseas voters to be counted as long as they are postmarked by Election Day. The ballots must arrive at a clerk's office within 6 days of the election. But Michigan Republican Party Chair Jim Runstead says he thinks the court made a bad decision.
Let's have an election day, not election week, not election month, because mischief can occur. Anyone who knows there's an election coming up should be mailing their ballot in or bringing their ballot in or voting on election day without this open door to potential fraud.
Democratic Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson says the ruling is a victory for voting rights. Immigrant rights advocates from Catholic organizations as well as other denominations met on Monday to adopt a set of policy objectives to organize around. Juan Pablo Quivano spoke to members of the group Strangers No Longer about one of these goals, more oversight of immigration detention centers. Through a translator, he said he was detained at the North Lake Processing Center for about 3 months.
Sin embargo, esta disculpa...
For the federal investigation into the health and safety conditions of all Michigan immigrant detention centers, including the North Lake Processing Center, call for an indefinite moratorium on new immigrant detention facilities and pursue instead humane community-based alternatives.
Other proposals include increased due process protections for detained people and making driver's licenses available regardless of immigration status. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled in favor of the Trump administration's efforts to end temporary protected status. TPS allows people fleeing violence abroad to live and work in the U.S. Republican Steve Frisbee represents Michigan's 44th State House District, which includes the Battle Creek area, home to a Burmese community of thousands. Burma's TPS status is one of many the Trump administration has tried to end. However, Frisbee says he supports last week's Supreme Court decision on TPS, adding that people fleeing Burma should instead apply for asylum.
All in favor of letting them come to the country, sort them out, and look at them on an individual basis or a family basis to figure out what they're fleeing from and why, and if it's legitimate, and they're not from, you know, the military side of things in Burma.
According to a statement last December from the Springfield Burma Center, around 50 TPS holders in the Battle Creek area could be affected by a status change. Focus West Michigan is brought to you by listeners like you. To support this show and everything we do here, visit WGVUnews.org and click the donate button. And for a weekly dose of news right to your inbox, sign up for the WGVU newsletter. Tonight at 10 o'clock on WGVU Public Television, Frontline premieres The Crown Prince and the President. The film examines the alliance between Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and President Donald Trump, ambitions for a new Middle East, and how Trump and Jared Kushner opened doors to arms deals, investments, and personal profit despite Saudi abuses. WGVU's Patrick Center spoke with correspondent and producer Martin Smith.
The United States and Saudi Arabia have had a relationship since the time of Roosevelt, and it was a kind of oil promise in exchange for security that we would protect them. And the relationship continued, and to some degree it continues now, but under Trump it intensified and became much more transactional, if you will. And with Trump, it's immediately after the election, before the inauguration, the Saudis sent a team into New York to meet with Trump, and they met with Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, to sort of reset the relationship because they'd had a bad relationship with Obama and they wanted to set things right as they saw it. So that's sort of where we begin our story, is with that initial outreach by the Saudis to Trump. And they were very encouraged by what they heard because the Trump administration was headed by business people, and they liked that very much.
What has transpired since then?
Well, what transpired since then? I mean, first of all, Trump decided to accept a Saudi invitation to go there for his first foreign trip, which is unusual for any American president to go to Saudi Arabia for his first foreign trip. And it was opposed by many advisors. Usually presidents go to Canada or Mexico first or Europe. But the relationship was solidified. And the idea was that if, and this was Jared Kushner's baby, if they could get Saudi Arabia to recognize and formalized diplomatic relations with Israel, that the rest of the Arab world would follow and you'd have peace in the Middle East. So that first trip takes place. And then immediately after that, the crown prince, he wasn't the crown prince during that trip. He was second in line or third in line, if you will. And immediately after that, he crushes his rival, his cousin, MBN, Mohammed bin Nayef. And then he goes on to arrest and jail a lot of people that were considered dissidents. And then ultimately, you get to the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, who was writing critical columns in the Washington Post. All during this time, the Trump administration stood by the Saudis. They said it was too important, the relationship was too important, and so human rights abuses be damned. They kept the relationship running.
Throughout this 90-minute documentary, you pull in different voices, and there are those who are critical of MBS providing a different perspective of what is taking place in this relationship.
Yeah, well, there is this idea that if a authoritarian leader, which Mohammed bin Salman is, that if you provide support to him, that you're encouraging his worst behavior, that he thinks he can get away with it, ultimately getting away with murder in the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. And so throughout, they decide to stand by Saudi Arabia as part of an America First agenda, that you don't want to rock that boat. You want to keep them on your side, and you're still hoping that they will recognize Israel. Well, that all fell apart starting on October 7th with the Hamas attack, the horrendous attack by Hamas on Israel, and then the horrendous retaliation on Gaza, resulting in thousands of deaths. And so Saudi Arabia never did sign on to recognizing Israel, especially after that.
There is this idea of transforming the Middle East, which no one in American leadership has been able to get their arms around.
You know, Mohammed bin Salman is an interesting character because he is a modernizer. He has loosened restrictions on women. He has allowed citizens to attend movies, to listen to music. I mean, when he took over, things were, as they had been for decades, very restricted. On the other hand, he didn't give freedom to critics. He didn't allow freedom of speech. Due process in courts was not loosened. I mean, they pretty much operate as they wish. And so that became very disappointing to a lot of people, including all human rights experts, and including Jamal Khashoggi, who was writing for the Washington Post. So while on the one hand he was a reformer, on the other hand he was continuing a very harsh crackdown on his people.
Through this vision for a new Saudi Arabia, and you mentioned the transactional relationship, what develops? The arms deals for investments, what do we see?
After the first term ends, Jared Kushner sets up a new business in private equity, something he had no experience in. But he sets this up and immediately gets a $2 billion infusion from the Saudis. And the Treasury Secretary, Mnuchin, also goes in, gets $1 billion. And increasingly over the second term, Trump, the Trump Organization, run by his two sons, Don Jr. and Eric, set up a lot of lucrative licensing deals, licensing the Trump name on various real estate projects. There's crypto, and they rake in lots of money in the second term. And the feeling was that they had resisted this in the first term because of appearances of conflicts of interest. In the second term, their attitude was, we're going to be criticized anyway, so why don't we just go ahead and take advantage of the opportunities that are in front of us?
Does some of this take place? You say just go ahead and do it anyway because Congress does not investigate any of these deals?
Exactly right. I mean, Congress is not willing to take on Trump, but we've seen that on many fronts. Republican-controlled House and Senate have just not found it egregious enough to want to hold hearings and question the activities. So money has continued to flow from the Gulf states, including Saudi Arabia, into the pockets of the Trump administration.
Where does this position the Trump family moving forward in the Middle East and also in dealings here in the United States?
You know, it's an interesting fact that when Trump became president in his second term, he didn't have a lot in the bank. Now he has made, over this period of time, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's enriched them tremendously.
You've been covering the Middle East and the U.S.-Saudi relationship for over more than 20 years, and you interview over 100 people. What is it that you're hearing from most everyone you talk with?
Well, that the ambitions of Kushner were unrealistic to begin with, and that, you know, he had no experience in diplomacy. He pretty much ignored advice that he was getting from previous diplomats because he said, look, they didn't solve any problems, so I'm going to take this on. I think the hubris is what I want people to understand. I want people to see the confidence and hubris that was brought to the Middle East by somebody who had no knowledge, as he admits in the documentary, of Saudi Arabia at all. He said, only what I've read and heard. I didn't know anything about Saudi Arabia. So he takes on, you know, the Middle East is a complicated, ever-changing place. And now we're in a worse place than we were when Trump first came to office in 2017, unfortunately.
What would you like viewers to take away from this documentary?
Well, in a sense, we're raking the leaves of a lot of reporting that we've done over the years and getting it all together and putting everything in context. I think it's good for people to understand the depth of this relationship and also the ambitions that drove it. And in the end, after October 7th and the Hamas attack on Israel and then the war in Gaza, everything fell apart. There was this idea that Kushner had was that you get everybody to recognize Israel, you get them to do business together. He had a slogan, peace through prosperity, but it ignored ethnic and religious differences. You just can't buy your way through all of that thicket. And so in the end, everything that all the ambitions sort of went by the wayside. And now Trump is stuck joining Bibi Netanyahu in a war in Iran that he can't figure out how to get out of. So it all kind of look good in the beginning that they were going to have these relationships and make peace in the Middle East. It's fallen apart.
Frontline presents The Crown Prince and the President. It airs tonight at 10 o'clock on WGVU Public Television. Award-winning correspondent, writer, and producer Martin Smith, as always, we thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
This has been Focus West Michigan from WGVU for Tuesday, June 30, 2026. I'm Joe Bilecki. Our audio operations manager is Rick Bierling, and our news and public affairs director is Patrick Center. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll be back with more news and events in West Michigan tomorrow. Thanks for listening.